Good morning, Heritage. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. This is Mr. Neese, and you are listening to the Griffin Rundown, a weekly podcast for HCA. Hope that you're listening together on the way to school this morning. This week on the podcast, the interview is with Pastor Jimmy Cozy. He's a pastor in the area, and we talk about the importance of adversity in the spiritual growth of our children, and for us, for that matter, but specifically, this topic is about spiritual growth through adversity for our children. And then I'll give an update on upcoming events at Heritage. I'll give a charter update. We'll do a good look at a great book with Mrs. Walton, who is a first grade teacher in Peninsula in the study center. I'll give an update on the construction and, of course, a joke of the week. But let's start with the calendar items. There will be a work day this Saturday, April 13th at the Pepper Pike campus from 9 a.m. to noon. So please see your newsletter for more information. Additionally, Grandparents Day is right around the corner. Can you believe it? Mid-April is here. And that means Grandparents Day at Heritage. Grandparents Day for our academy is April 17th in Bainbridge and April 17th and 18th in Peninsula. And Study Center students in Peninsula is also April 17th and 18th. So please see the newsletters to RSVP, or you can send the RSVP to the grandparents this week so that they can do it. But please do RSVP. It helps us greatly to have headcounts to know who to expect. There is a lot of planning that goes into it. So thank you for doing that timely. The hymn of this week is Amazing Grace.
I think it's probably familiar to most of us. But again, I would encourage you to make it a routine to listen to this with your children, either at the dinner table a time or two this week, or maybe in the car. You know, turn it off today when it's done, and maybe the next several days, listen to it once in the car and join in and sing heartily. Certainly the lyrics of Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me, is applicable for all of us who would call Christ Savior and Lord. And how good is it for our kids to sing the song with us and for our kids to hear their mom and dad and see their mom and dad singing these lyrics. So I encourage this one to you with all my heart. Construction update. Last week, I was at the campus a few times, and boy, things are really moving along. But before I get to what's happening there, again, there is a work day on Saturday from 9 to noon. So see your newsletter. We've had grandparents, parents, staff, and friends of HCA helping, and much has been accomplished. So, but there's obviously a lot more to do. So we hope many of you can make it this Saturday from 9 to noon. But demolition is ongoing and renovation is ongoing in five of the buildings at Pepper Pike. In fact, we're actually beyond demolition in many of the areas. There are walls that are now going up. There are holes and channels cut in the floor for new bathroom locations. Piping and ductwork are being re-put together up above. And so it is very exciting to see. So we are also in regular meetings. I think I've shared this with you before with the builders and architects each week. And they continue to tell us that we are on track to have keys handed to us by the end of July. So that is a really positive sign because, as you know, school starts in August. So this is good. So please continue to pray for the work and for the Lord's hand of provision, and that things would stay timely as they have been. So thank you for praying, and please continue. A charter update. As I mentioned before spring break, we were resubmitting to the state the items for clarification that they requested. Since then, they have also scheduled the site visit date for later this month in April yet. So this is the next big step we've been waiting for. It's a big hurdle for us. So please be praying for the Lord's favor as we prepare to welcome our visitors later this month. And the site visit means things are moving. So we're very thankful. In addition to this, as I've shared with you, we're making preparations behind the scenes for the charter and all that that means, especially for laying the groundwork for EdChoice scholarship for your family. So we're working on that behind the scenes so that we'll be ready to help you navigate the process when the time is right, which is growing closer. And again, I would encourage you to listen to the November 28th episode of the Griffin Rundown, where I interviewed Troy McIntosh from the Ohio Christian Education Network. This is very helpful in clarifying what it means and what it does not mean as we pursue a charter with the state of Ohio. And again, just to make sure this is clear, we are not pursuing a public charter status. We are pursuing a chartered non-public status. This does not mean we're becoming a public school. This means we are chartered non-public, and we can continue to hire as we want. We can continue to admit students and families according to our standards and our mission, and we can continue to teach and select the curriculum that we desire. So this is a good thing, and we're very thankful for the process and all the help that we've received along the way. All right, well, now we are going to do a good look at a great book. And I'm very happy to welcome into the studio today one of our fabulous and longtime Study Center teachers, and she teaches first grade in the Study Center, Mrs. Walton. Mrs. Walton, thanks for joining us.
It's a joy to be here.
Yeah. Mrs. Walton, before we dive into Good Look at a Great Book, would you tell us how many years you've been at Heritage and then all the various things that you've taught? I know there are many.
How long do we have? No. I actually was at Heritage our first year, Heritage's first ever year, and I taught science 2 days 1 week and 1 day the following week, so alternated. And then I took numerous years off to raise my own family and came back in, I believe it was 2016. And so taught kindergarten for a couple years. I taught junior K for a couple years, and alternating that junior K time have taught the first grade Study Center. And I really do love being in first grade.
That's good. And you also have taught in Hudson. You've taught in Bainbridge. You've taught in Peninsula. Am I missing any?
Yes. No, all of those. Yeah. Lots of buildings.
Boy, logic school, early childhood, grammar school. You're the utility knife of Heritage.
It's been fun. It's fun to see all aspects.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, you do a great job.
I appreciate that.
The Neese family was blessed to have you.
Aww.
I think just one of mine, right? One of mine.
I had just Luke. Yeah.
That's right.
Just Luke, but it was a sweet year.
That's right. Way back. Okay. Well, Mrs. Walton, a good look at a great book. What book are you going to give us a good look at today?
I'm bringing a book that is probably not as well known, but we really had a lot of fun with it this year. It's called The Glorious Flight Across the Channel with Louis Blériot. It's by Alice and Martin Provenson, and it's actually a Caldecott Medal winner. Hmm. So it has some great illustrations in it.
And tell me about this book. Was this a teacher read one in the first grade classroom?
Yeah, so this is one of the picture books that is supplied by Memoria Press. So it's part of our curriculum. And we typically couple it with a unit on inventors. So the children right now are following this up by researching an inventor of their choice. So the book is about Louis Blériot. And I think the reason the kids like it is he's an actual person. So this is based on a true story, and it takes place in France in the early 1900s. And it's the story of Louis and his invention of an airplane that will travel the English Channel, fly across the English Channel. So he was the first one to fly across the English Channel.
Okay. So the French beat the Brits to the feet.
Yes. Yep.
I'm sure much to the Brits' chagrin.
We didn't dive into that, but I'm sure you are correct.
That's good. So in this book, what happened? Does it detail his failings and shortcomings and then ultimate triumph?
It really does. And I think that's why it really made an impact this year is it walks you through, and it was really his, if I'm remembering correctly, his ninth attempt at creating that he finally had success. So it was really fun as a class to talk about perseverance and about, we introduced the word tenacious and what it means to be tenacious. into Carry On. And then we tied that into Galatians 6:9 as well. Do not grow weary in well-doing, for you reap a harvest if you do not give up. So kind of applied that same principle of persevering to our spiritual lives as well.
That's good. That's again, I think this is the recurring theme that's coming up, but I'm so thankful as we have the opportunity to hear Heritage teachers talk. And this book has no explicit, I could be wrong. I've never read it actually, Kristen, but.
No, you're correct. There's no faith message in it.
Right.
Explicitly. Right.
Right. Yeah. But again, we read good books through the lens of the scriptures and understanding that there is much virtue and much good and also much vice to understand also, but much virtue to be gleaned, and we're able to point to the goodness of Jesus and the fact that we can also see in the scriptures that he persevered for the joy that was set before him, and that we're not called to persevere by our own power, right?
So right, and that yes, that's exactly right. Yep.
Any other comments or discussions that came out of that? I'm so thankful to hear the story of perseverance. Any other talking points or discussions that came up with the kids?
We did. We actually followed it up later in the week with a book called The Creator in You, written by Jordan Rayner, and talked about how as we create, as we invent, that really reflects the ultimate creator, our creator. And so just being a picture of him when we dive into whether, you know, it's creating an invention or art or anything like that. So that was kind of another fun little subcontext to the story.
That's good. Yeah. And I know that theme is going to circle back again when these kids don't know that they'll remember it from first grade to seventh grade, but I know the idea of the being little sub creators is brought back full circle when they hit logic school again. And
that's great.
Yeah. So I'm thankful that you're laying that groundwork even now, Kristen.
That's the joy of this whole, of classical education, isn't it? I think that's, and being in all of those different areas is being just able to see how everything repeats as they grow. So that's great. Really cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm very thankful for you. You know, people don't know this, but a little behind the scenes look, I think every year at some point in time, Kristen gets a phone call or two from me or Mr. Bond or Slayers or somebody saying, yeah, you work 2 days a week. Any chance you want to work? So we're always thankful for as much Walton as we can get in the building.
I appreciate it. I love being here. I really do love being here. It is it's an immense blessing. So thank you.
And now it's time for your favorite segment and mine. It's the joke of the week. And I'm happy to welcome into the studio. Boy, you get a double dose of Mrs. Walton today. I have Mrs. Walton here from the study center. Mrs. Walton, do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. All right, Mrs. Walton, I understand that you have a joke that could make us laugh a little bit.
I do have a favorite joke. Even though we're heading into spring, it's about snowmen. So what did one snowman say to the other snowman?
What did one? I don't know.
Do you smell carrots?
Do you smell carrots? I get it. Really funny one. I bet in some cars right now, there's some head scratching. Mrs. Walton, where did you learn that joke?
I think I probably heard it on the radio.
Well, there you go.
Stuck with me. Yep.
Do people laugh when you tell that joke?
They do. It does get a chuckle. Yeah. It's a fun one.
It's definitely chuckle worthy. Well, today our guest on the Griffin Rundown is Jimmy Cozy. Jimmy is a pastor at Christ Community Chapel in Hudson, and he has been there for quite some time. I think we'll hear from him exactly how long he's been there, but he's also had numerous roles at the church and has seen quite a bit in his time at the church and has a lot of experience and has had a lot of interactions with a lot of families, with children of all ages. And so we thought, what a great opportunity to talk with Jimmy about helping our children grow spiritually through adversity, which is not an easy topic, but I think we all recognize and the scripture would attest that we grow in hardship as we run to the Lord. So without further ado, let's welcome Pastor
Jimmy Cozy to the Griffin Rundown. Jimmy Cozy, welcome to the Griffin Rundown.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. Well, hey, let's just dive right in. Would you share how long have you been a pastor? Where do you serve and what are your responsibilities at the church?
So I pastor at Christ Community Chapel in Hudson. I've been there for, I have to do some math, hold on, coming up on, I think it'll be 13 years been here. So the first eight or so was as the middle school ministry director and then the student ministry director. And then I kind of led all of our under 18 ministries from 0 to 18, so kids and students. And then over the last few years, I've changed roles into my current role is as the director of operations, which kind of means two things. Number one, I do still do a lot of the pastoral stuff that kind of the Lord called me into ministry to do in the first place. So, you know, the people oriented kinds of things, but also just I feel like some of the back of the house stuff that an organization needs somebody to do in order to be successful. A lot of those things are my responsibility. And it's just, you know, I love doing that stuff. It's great to be able to set up structures and processes to make sure that we are doing really effective ministry here at CCC. But yeah, I've been here 13 years and love it. It's been great.
Yeah. Wow. 13 years. I didn't expect that you were going to say that big of a number. Thanks for your long faithfulness to one spot and to the church, certainly.
Yeah, you know, it's been really cool just to see the way the Lord has worked throughout that time. And I didn't know what I was getting into when I decided to go into ministry, which is a whole different category of story. But just it's been just such a great blessing and joy in my life to be able to see the Lord changing people's lives, drawing them to himself and helping them, you know, to grow and become more like the person that he created them to be. And it's just a wonderful thing.
That's good. Jimmy, tell us about your family.
Yeah. So my wife is Emily. Emily and I have been married. It will be 14 years this upcoming December. So, I love Emily. She's a way better person than I am. And so maybe next time you should have her on the podcast instead of me. Then we have four children. We have Hollis, who is a 9-year-old. She is currently a third grader at Heritage. And I'm sure that you've had plenty of run-ins with her, if I know Hollis. And then Elliot is 7. She's a first grader at Heritage. She's maybe the sweetest girl in first grade at Heritage. So I'm sorry, other first grade parents, you came in second place and you're just gonna have to deal with it. And then James and Elena are twins. So they were, Emily and I decided we wanted to try to have a third kid and then we did. And then it was a kind of 2-for-1 deal. So we got James and Elena. They are 4 years old. They will be at Heritage for pre-K next year. So that just means that you really probably should ramp up some of your safety and security policies based on the number of my children that are going to be running around your buildings in a couple of years. So
that's pretty funny. Yeah, you have a burgeoning quiver. And I'll also say I'm happy to report I don't think I've ever had any run-ins with Sweet Hollis. So
okay. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she's a firecracker. So,
sweetie. Okay. Well, hey, you mentioned obviously your two older girls are at Heritage. How did you first learn about Heritage?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, like I said earlier, my first 8 years here at CCC were as the student, but we're in student ministry, and so you know, I just interact with a lot of families and a lot of students and. I think during that time, you know, Heritage was pretty young and just getting started. It was a sort of new to the scene in Northeast Ohio in terms of the Christian school environment. And there were just a few families within our ministry that I had overlap with, namely the Hutts, Lance and Gabby, and the Volks, Jane and Volk. But there were several more. But, as I interacted with students, I started to be really impressed by the students that I interacted with that I knew who were a part of Heritage. You know, and at that point, I think it might have been just Study Center. I don't know, how everything was structured then. But I was just really impressed by both their academic prowess and their ability to sort of reason. But then also one of the things that was most impressive to me, and especially as a student ministry pastor, was just their ability to articulate their faith, their understanding of God's word, just the amount of scripture that they knew. And it just, so that was the first kind of exposure to Heritage. And then, you know, obviously Emily and I started having children at a rapid pace. And so as they started to get older, we started to think, okay, what do we want to do schooling options wise? And so when Hollis was ready to go to pre-K, we thought, okay, well, I had really, like I said, had a positive experience with Heritage and with the students and even the staff that I had interacted with up to that point through my role here at CCC. And so I kind of said, hey, let's give this a shot. You know, I think this isn't a podcast about public versus private school, but we're trying to decide, you know, kind of a fork in the road of we live in Hudson, which is a great school district. And so we were just trying to decide, okay, what's the long-term vision and direction that we see for our kids? And at that point, we just felt like Heritage was the best option for us. And it's just been wonderful. Just, you know, there's something really sweet about, just having, you know, Hollis and Elliot in the environment that they're in and, being challenged the way that they are. And, you know, it's just been a really good thing for our family. So we're excited to see James and Elena step into that too, and see how the Lord works through that in their lives as well.
Yeah. Well, we're blessed to have your family and your girls at the school right now. And also, just as an aside, I shared this with folks on the podcast several times, and you were just attesting to it, that we can advertise and market all we want, but it's, you know, 95 times out of 100, it's going to be just positive family references for why other families show up at Heritage. So thankful for the Hutts and the Volks and others like them that shared Heritage with you. So Jimmy, before we get into our topic today, I want to give you an opportunity for just a soapbox. And would you just share the importance of regular church attendance and membership?
Yeah, this is something that is really important. You know, obviously I'm a pastor, so I feel like, you know, I do have to soapbox a little bit. I just think, you know, the Lord gave us the church for a reason. It's because following Jesus was never meant to be done as an individual enterprise. It's always been something that is supposed to be done within the context of community. And I believe firmly that that community is the local church. And, you know, there are a lot of just terrific local churches in this area that through my time here at CCC, I've come in contact with, you know, for various reasons. And I just feel like it's so important for us as followers of Jesus to be in community. And I think that there's a temptation in this current age where we have so much technology and so much information available to us to kind of view our faith as an individual enterprise, where it's like, well, I like this podcast and I like to listen to this church's sermons. And sometimes I'll log into the live stream of this church and that church. And I'm not saying necessarily that there's anything wrong with doing those things. But what I would say is that that the Lord designed the church to be community for us. And so there's just so many things that happen. One of the things that when I teach our membership class here at CCC, you know, we live stream our services. And one of the things I'll say is, like, one of the things that we want for our members is to attend a weekend service. And I always make sure that I say in person, because there are things that happen in person that just don't happen through a TV screen or a computer screen or an internet connection. And I feel strongly about that. You can't take communion through a computer screen. That's very difficult. Things like that. Or, you know, one of the things that we always say here is part of the reason why we sing together in community is because sometimes, you know, when you're singing, it's because you are singing sort of as an expression of praise and worship and just like, but sometimes you're singing for the person next to you who is going through a difficult time and you don't know about it. But the fact that they're hearing, you know, that God can be trusted, that God loves them, that the Lord has good things for them, you know, that it's just, you miss out on that aspect if you are not a part of a local church. And then you miss out on the opportunity to have others speak into your walk with the Lord and how you're growing. And I just think that's so important, because Otherwise, you know, I feel like every one of us has a little bit of a funhouse mirror view of ourselves. So we have a tendency to try to accentuate the things that we like and maybe not think about the things that we don't like. And that applies to our faith as well. And so I think part of being in community as a member of a local church is it allows you to have pastors and others in your lives who can give you a more well-rounded perspective and speak into your life.
Mm. That's really good. And thanks for sharing that. And with you, we are meant to be in community and part of a body, and no problem with going and being encouraged with other pastors that you respect online, but that it's not meant to replace the body and being together. And similarly, Jimmy, you know, we share this in the right seasons with folks of, hey, Heritage isn't the replacement for your church either. And we've heard that from time to time of, you know, this community becomes almost like church, and we exist, just to remind everybody, we exist not to replace the church and not to replace the family, but our role at the school is to come alongside mom and dad as the primary educators of their children, and then to come alongside the church, and Lord willing, for the 35 to 40 hours that kids are here each week, we are training up and keeping on the same tracks.
Absolutely.
The same message that mom and dad and the church are, right?
Absolutely. I feel like that, you know, in some ways will dovetail into the topic we're going to talk about a little bit later, but I do feel like it's important for parents to embrace their role as kind of the primary discipler of their kids. And right. That's something that, you know, as our kids have gotten older, has Emily and I have felt challenged that you can't just hand them to a Sunday school teacher and hand them to a Christian school teacher and say, hey, take care of this. I feel like, you know, the Lord made those kids and gave them to us. And so while those elements, a school can help supplement, you know, I feel like involvement in the local church and then us embracing our role as parents are key to helping our kids develop a robust, vibrant faith in Jesus.
That's right. That's right. It's good. Okay, well, you just mentioned it briefly. Well, we didn't actually say it, but now let's actually dive into the topic here, Jimmy. And our topic that would love for you to share a little bit with today and where our questions will direct us are on the topic of the role of adversity in our children's spiritual growth. So, you know, you have the perspective as a parent, as we were just discussing, but as a pastor too. So why is this an important topic?
I think it's an important topic because there's nobody who is going to go through life without experiencing some sort of adversity. And, you know, as time goes along, kids face a lot of different kinds of adversity. And I think that I can definitely feel it in my own sort of heart and spirit when I see one of my children struggling with something or experiencing some adversity that you know, I start to feel some type of way about it and I want to try to immediately intervene, which maybe we can talk about a little bit later. But I just feel like, you know, we would be naive to think that life will be smooth sailing and that you're not going to experience difficult things. And I think that there's a way of processing those things and going through those things that actually can be really, really helpful in growing in our faith, whether you're a child or an adult. And so I think this is one of those things where I feel like this is a good topic to talk about in peacetime, so to speak, so that you're ready for when the proverbial storm comes, because I think it's inevitable. And so the question is, how are we prepared to help our kids navigate those things, to help our kids process, whether it's like, hey, I tried out for simple adversity, like I tried out for this basketball team and I got cut and that was really disappointing to me. Or, you know, I had a loved one that I really cared for that passed away, or I'm experiencing difficulty in my relationships at school. There's so many different ways that kids will experience different types of adversity. And I think we can equip them and also leverage that to help them grow in their faith in Jesus.
Yeah. So, you know, in your role as a, you know, you said at some point in time, you were in charge of all youth up to age 18 at the church. So certainly you worked with parents through many hard things, I'm certain. So without, you know, betraying any confidence, if you can, would you mind sharing an example of, or two, or, you know, whatever you can come up with of maybe parents protecting their kids from adversity, and maybe you had to come alongside and encourage, boy, this one's actually, we don't need to protect them from it. We need to help shepherd them through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a few that maybe come to mind. You know, one of the other things that I do in the community is I coach a couple of sports here in Hudson at the middle school level. And sometimes there's overlap there where, you know, I have a, you know, I could have a kid on the team. You know, it's a public school, so I can't take for granted the spiritual status of anybody who's interacting with that. But I have had some parents and families who were Christians, either because they were a part of CCC or they go to another church. But I do remember, you know, a conversation I had with a dad, like probably 4 or 5 years ago now. You know, his son, one of the things that is interesting about eighth grade basketball, which was the level that I was coaching at that point in time, is, you know, you just got guys of varying size and development. So, you know, you got the one kid who's 6'2" and he has a mustache. And then you have the other kid who is 5'1" and his voice isn't even low yet. And so I think, you know, this dad was just kind of lamenting to me that his son, he wasn't getting playing time, which the point of the meeting was, I'm meeting with the coach to tell him that I'm disappointed that my son's not getting playing time. And I think, like, as a dad, it felt like his first reaction was to challenge that and to do whatever he could to mitigate that, because at home he was experiencing his son's disappointment about not getting to be on the floor, and you know, why I'm even doing this, why am I going to practice for 2 hours a day, it's all this work and I get 2 minutes a game and it's just really disappointing. And I think at that point, you know, as I started to get to know that dad, the opportunity was there to be like, hey, maybe there's something the Lord's trying to use this to work out in your son. So, because, like, you know, as a coach, you have to kind of separate your roles in that situation between being a coach and being a pastor and being a friend, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what I realized in that moment was that the temptation was there to just, I'm going to go to the coach, I'm going to challenge him, I'm going to, you know, with the end goal being, I need to say whatever, what can I say to get my son more playing time? Whereas I was approaching it thinking, you know, okay, let's think about this kid as a whole person, not just as a basketball player. And because I knew this dad was a Christian and followed Jesus, like, to start to think about, okay, what is it possible that the Lord is trying to do something here? Or maybe our is another way of processing this, rather than just to say, hey son, I know you're so disappointed, I'm going to go talk to that coach because he's out of his mind, I can't believe he's not playing you. But just to say, hey, let's think about maybe it's a problem that your identity is so tied into your playing time that you can't function if you don't get as much playing time as you think you should get. Like, maybe that's something we should talk about. So that's an example. I think, you know, another one that comes to mind is I was talking to a parent of one of our students. This was probably, this could have been 7 or 8 years ago, I don't remember, but the student was more of a high school age student. So starting to really think deeply about some things and then starting to really question his faith. And that was creating sort of a trial for the entire family because, you know, they were a Christian family it was just a challenging thing for them to see their son begin to struggle with what he believed. And I think, you know, the parent was in some ways meeting with me to be like, hey, can you just give me some quick answers to these questions so that things will get back on track and we'll stop experiencing this. And right. I think those are situations again where, you know, that might be another topic for another podcast, but it is really difficult when a child starts to question what they've been believing their entire lives and their work. But actually part of what happens there is that there's it can be a really good thing if you allow them to process through it in a healthy and I got to be honest, patient way. Mm-hmm. But you have to have a tolerance for a little bit of them struggling in order for them to be able to really think about their faith. So that's another one where I think it was just like, hey, we need quick answers. You know, this needs to be solved fast. And it's like, it's not always going to work that way. Sometimes you have to walk through it instead of simply jumping over it. So,
That's really good, Jimmy. And, you know, we just to dovetail and again to heritage of, boy, there's a reason we teach logic, formal and informal logic, to kids when they hit seventh and eighth grade, because it is so common at that stage of life for the children to start questioning everything, right? And it's not a bad thing for them to start to have questions about their faith. And this is one that we want to encourage them to think through and talk about with mom and dad and with youth pastors and their teachers at their school. This is a good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that Pastor Joe, who's the senior pastor here, says, it's kind of a gross analogy, but he says that, you know, kids, if you think about like their faith, like a meal, kids inhale it when they're young and they just eat it in giant chunks and they don't digest it. And so there's always a process that happens as they get older and they start to, you know, that middle level age happens where they start to move from concrete thinking to abstract thinking. And they're starting to ask questions. He said the way that we would say it is sometimes they have to regurgitate some of those truths and cut them up and chew them up and eat them again. Because they just, their mind has started to develop to the point where they're like, well, I took that for granted when I was seven, but now right. I'm 13 and I'm not sure it makes sense to me. So can you help me, you know, work through that? And as a parent, that can be really challenging because obviously then you have all the what ifs that come into your mind. What if my child walks away from their faith? What if they do this? What if they do that? And I think in some ways that's adversity both for the child and for the parent.
That's right. That's good. Good analogy. So we've talked about this. It's obviously natural for parents to want to protect their children, right? And to keep them from harm. So, you know, as you've considered this and, you know, you were over kids all the way up through 18 for several years, how do we, you know, do you have any tools or a schematic or framework for help us to just consider, you know, when is this right protecting and when am I maybe eking into overprotecting my kids and actually I'm harming them by trying to keep them from struggling?
Yeah, I think that's it's a difficult question to answer because this probably looks different for every parent and every family. I think maybe the way that I would answer that is just to say that as a parent, and this challenge is just for me, is just as much for me as it is for anybody else. One of the things I was thinking about this morning is, you know, this was this topic of adversity, and it was really easy for me to soapbox about this when I was a student ministry pastor and I didn't have any kids of my own, because it's like, I'm a great armchair quarterback where it's like, hey, I can't believe you're doing this with your kid. That doesn't make sense to me. But it's like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. And so now that I have my own children, I can see how much different it feels when it's like my kid is the one who's experiencing the adversity and just that parental instinct that kicks in to protect and to, you know, you see your kid in pain and you just have to, you feel like you have to intervene. You have to stop it from happening. So I think I don't know where the line is in terms of overprotecting in that point, but I just think that maybe the way I would frame that is to say, you know, you have to figure out a mechanism for processing through adversity, because even if you are the most, unless you tie your kid up in the basement and say you're never going to go outside of the house, like your kid is going to experience adversity. And the irony is if you do that, then they're actually experiencing adversity there because they can't interact with people. But I think it's more like, have we as parents intentionally thought through kind of a strategy for how we're going to help our kids process when things get difficult? And also every situation is different, but you know, one of the things that I feel like is important when it comes to this kind of thing is that I feel like God's faithfulness is almost always clearly viewed in the rearview mirror. And so what I mean by that is our kids are going to walk through adverse situations, whether it is, again, there's a long list you could write of different things that our kids are going to come in contact with that are going to be really difficult. I think one of the things I've seen to be true in my own life is that sometimes you don't see what God is doing until you can look back. And that's what I mean when I say God's faithfulness is often best viewed in the rearview mirror. You know, that's actually, I feel like that's scriptural too. You think about like the entire book of Deuteronomy, where multiple times, you know, God is saying, "Hey, I am the Lord. I brought you out of Egypt." So he's saying, "You remember when you were in Egypt? Remember the Exodus? Remember how challenging that was? Remember the fear that I'm the one who brought you through that." Mm. And I think there's something to that as parents, where I think when our kids experience adversity, I feel like the temptation is to jump in and solve the problem right away. I don't know if that's the right move. Maybe it is, depending on how bad the problem. I don't know. I can't always answer every situation. But what I do think is that that we have to make sure that we open the lines of communication with our children, so that we can help them reflect and see how God is working and moving in their lives. This is something, by the way, that just to kind of my wife does this tremendously. Like, she's a much more patient person than I am. And so, you know, there are often nights where, you know how it is as a parent. It's like you're going through the grind of every day, and every day it's like Groundhog Day, where you're just trying to survive and get kids to sleep. And then there are so many nights though, where, you know, we'll be working on getting all four of the kids to bed, and it'll be way later than I expected. And I'm downstairs, like watching the Cavs game or something. And Emily is just locked in to this really deep conversation with Hollis or with Elliot about something related to their faith or about it. Cause she just always has time for their questions. Mm. And I think like that, what that does, I feel, is creates the communication line that you're going to need when something really serious happens, you know, when a loved one passes away, or when something happens at school that just is difficult. Part of our job as parents is to just make sure that those communication lines are open, so that when you have to process through something, it's not like you're starting from zero and you don't talk about things like this very often. And now all of a sudden you're trying to go from zero to like this deep spiritual conversation. Yeah. But just creating that language is really important. And that comes through just consistent, I feel like, engagement and pointing kids to Jesus.
Yeah. You thanks for sharing that. And you made that comment early. I don't remember exactly what you said, but a couple of minutes ago, you made a comment of, laying the groundwork and talking about adversity before it happens, so that we're not caught off guard, and it's not, you know, we actually have a paradigm for which to understand it, that, you know, life isn't always going to be easy. And one that's been a scripture that's been a regular comfort for my family in this regard is at the very end of Genesis, when the story of Joseph takes up so much of the back, like third anyway, of the book of Genesis. And you know, he was sold into slavery, and then he was put in prison, and then the Lord elevated him to basically command over all of Egypt. And his brothers, who sold him into slavery, dad's about to die, Jacob's dying, and you know, you'd think they would have learned their lesson the first time, but they come to him and they lie to Joseph, and they say, "Hey, you know, dad, as he's dying, he said, you should really be kind to us," because they thought Jacob's going to die, and now Joseph's going to have his retribution on his brothers who sold him into slavery. And Joseph's response was in Genesis 50:20. He said, "What you meant for evil, the Lord meant for good, in order that many people might be saved." And so Joseph had this view of the Lord's providence over his adversity also. Hey, you meant this thing for bad for me, but guess what? The Lord in his sovereign plan actually had planned this and meant this for the good of many people, for their salvation. So just talk about, you know, as you were sharing, we need to talk about these things before they happen, because they're going to happen. And absolutely, we need to be reminding ourselves and our children that the Lord is sovereign over these things too, and we grow through them.
Absolutely. And I think that speaks to the importance of, as a family, figuring out a rhythm of looking at scripture or looking at God's word together, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think that we talk about here at CCC all the time, but just figuring out how will you do something akin to family worship. And like, there are so many great resources out there, depending on the age of your kids, you know, that we could advocate for, that like one of the ones that's been really helpful for our family, with especially with the younger ones, is the Jesus Storybook Bible, which is a phenomenal resource that just tells the story of the Bible while pointing back to Jesus again and again and again and again. And if you're, you know, I've just maybe another soapbox is if you're a parent and you haven't yet figured out what your family's rhythm is, I would just encourage you to start somewhere. You know, there are so many nights for us. Like I said at the beginning, we have four kids age 9 and under. There are going to be so many times where you do it and you get to the end and you feel like, man, that was insane. You know, Elena was under the table. James was throwing rice at Hollis. Nobody was listening to anything. But I think the part of the point of doing that is referring back to what I said earlier, creating a category for your family of we have conversations about spiritual things, so that when you need to have a conversation about a spiritual thing, again, you're not starting at zero. And that's really what's going to happen when you need to process through adversity with your kid, because we want to point them back to Jesus. But if we don't ever talk about Jesus in the first place, then we are inadvertently communicating to them that Jesus doesn't have anything to say. And so why would he have anything to say about our adversity? So I would just, if you're a parent and you're saying, and you don't currently have that, I would just think through, what does it look like for our family to have some sort of touch point, whether it's daily, you know, everybody has a plan that, like I said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Emily and I, our plan is currently, we just try to do it after dinner, and it happens, I would guess, I don't know, 89% of evenings. But you have to start somewhere. And I feel like that just having that language, if you don't process spiritual things with your children in peacetime, when it gets hard, it's going to be really difficult to ramp up to deep spiritual conversations about what's going on.
That's right. And they'll be processing it on their own without tools if we don't do these things,
or
through the lens of whatever the greatest influence on their life is that fills that void. So the television or their peers, that, you know, we obviously want more for our kids than that.
Absolutely. I'm a big advocate to say to parents, like, hey, somebody is always evangelizing your kids. It's just a matter of who and to what. And so you got to think critically about those things.
That's good. Hey, last question then. What guidance would you give to parents who are tempted to step in and rescue their kids? You know, so in whatever circumstance, you know, hey, before you do it, what question are we asking ourselves before we step in and save Billy from some experience?
You know, you have to ask the question first of, are they actually in danger? Because obviously there as a parent, you have a responsibility to intervene. But then I think what I would encourage parents to do is maybe to start to develop a list of conversation questions that they can use during and after adversity, just to say, you know, there might be situations where you need to intervene. It's not out of the realm of possibility that a child is being treated unfair at school, or that a bullying situation needs to be resolved, or that even like a coach gets it wrong and cutting them for, like, that's, it may be that, but I think if you just do that and you skip the conversation about what the Lord might be doing through it, I feel like you're doing yourself a disservice and you're doing your child a disservice. I feel so. Maybe it's more like arming yourself with a few questions to ask that will open up the conversation, whether it's, you know, a question about what do you feel like God is trying to teach you through this, or how have you prayed about this at all? Have you interacted with God on this at all? But I think, you know, kind of building up your toolbox to be able to just have the conversation, because I do think, you know, ultimately parenting is a relational exercise, and we can really help our kids if we are intentional about the way that we're approaching the ins and outs, the mundane parts of life. You know, I think maybe my last thing here would be, I think that when it comes to discipling our kids, I feel like for me at least, you know, I get caught up in trying to seek out like the mountaintop experiences where it's like something awesome happens, whether it's a incredible conversation or it's a, you know, a great thing that they accomplish, but really the vast majority of discipleship is done in the day to day. And Just having intentionality toward that. And, you know, there are some adversity that comes that's big, you know, really big things, but there's, you know, little adversity that happens day to day where, you know, your daughter might come home and say, man, I was sad at school because this kid didn't want to play with me on the playground. And having a quick question like, oh, what do you think Jesus has to say about that? You know, what does that mean for you? What does that mean for them? How can you love them better tomorrow, even though they're hurting you? What would Jesus have to say about that? Mm-hmm. That just can help your kids develop the skill of saying, you know, I'm not just going to focus on the adversity that I'm experiencing and how it's negatively impacting me, but I'm going to zoom out and think about, okay, what is God doing in my life and how might he use this to continue that work?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good. And as you were talking, I was pondering too, the self-inflicted wounds that our children, that I do to myself, right? But that our children bring upon themselves also. And yeah, you know, just having been in my seat for a long time and then having taught in high school for years before that, just knowing the desire that I might feel for my older kids and having sat through these conversations with parents, no, this is actually the grade that my child is earning or the grade that your child earned. And I know you desire to come and save them from the adversity of whatever letter grade you don't want them to have. But there's also this helping our children walk through adversity that maybe they inflicted on themselves. And
exactly.
And that's not easy thing either. And, you know, speaking just as both a dad and an administrator and a former teacher, that those are some things that we really need to consider too of, yeah, boy, there were decisions that you made here along the way. Right. And sometimes that is even harder because, it's not some other person's kid that's doing it. It's my own kid and
right.
Might cause me some self-reflection too. So, well, hey, Jimmy, this is really valuable stuff. Super thankful for you and, your role at the church and in shepherding families and children to, as we've been saying here today, to prize and prioritize Jesus and helping us all to understand that growth actually comes through adversity. And
yeah.
If we keep our eye there, then we actually will grow and reminding ourselves that, ultimately the Lord means these things for our good as we're trusting him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Jimmy Cozy, thanks so much. Thankful for your work and thankful that you and Emily and the kids are a part of Heritage.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks for having me. And it's been a pleasure to be here.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. Thank you for listening to the Griffin Rundown. As always, it is a pleasure to partner with you to cultivate our children to be lifelong learners who think and live for Christ. We'll see you again next Tuesday.